So I want you to imagine you're planning like the ultimate summer getaway. You book this beautiful, sun-drenched tourist apartment in Ibiza.
Oh, nice.
Right, whitewashed walls, a stunning view of the Mediterranean. Obviously, you're paying premium seasonal pricing for it.
Naturally.
Yeah, so you pay your deposit, you pack your bags, and you go have the time of your life. But what you are completely unaware of as you hand over your vacation budget is that your perfectly legitimate rent money is actively being mixed with the proceeds of a global cocaine empire.
Which is just wild to think about.
It really is. And today's deep dive into Spain's organized crime networks really proves that the whole Hollywood myth of, secret mafia backrooms, it's officially dead.
Yeah, completely outdated.
Right. We are looking at a highly adaptable multinational corporation hiding in plain sight, using the very infrastructure of your summer holiday to move illicit capital. We've got this fascinating investigative report on how these transnational trafficking groups operate, and our mission today is really to dismantle that old mafia stereotype.
And the corporate structure is precisely why this specific ecosystem, which is heavily linked to the Italian and 'Ndrangheta, is just so incredibly difficult for law enforcement to dismantle.
Because it's not just some guys in an alleyway.
No, not at all. I mean, they operate with the sophistication of a Fortune 500 logistics firm.
Yeah.
They aren't just selling illegal goods. They are meticulously engineering their integration into the legitimate European economy.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because to understand the mechanics of that integration, we should probably look at the fallout when their operational security actually fails.
Right, when things go wrong.
Exactly. So in September 2022, there was this massive coordinated law enforcement operation. They hit 32 suspects simultaneously across Ibiza, Barcelona, Malaga, and Tenerife.
A huge sweep.
Massive. And the physical haul was staggering. Authorities seized €300,000 in cash, 18 kilos of amphetamines.
Wow.
Yeah, 4.5 kilos of cocaine, firearms, ammunition, and like a 600-plant cannabis operation.
Which is a massive disruption, sure. But seizing drugs and cash is one thing. What's fascinating here is the geographic strategy.
Right, because Spain isn't just like a convenient location. The sources make it clear it is the absolute linchpin of Europe's illicit drug market.
Geopolitically and commercially, Spain offers the perfect storm for transnational trafficking. You have this extensive coastline with massive commercial ports that handle, immense volumes of global shipping.
Plus that crucial proximity to North Africa.
Exactly. And deep historical commercial ties to Latin America. It basically serves as the primary gateway for cocaine entering Europe. I mean, to understand the sheer volume we are talking about here, look at the 2024 seizure. Spanish authorities found 13 tons of cocaine hidden inside a single shipment of bananas from Ecuador.
13 tons in one shipment of bananas.
As one.
I mean, that requires a massive industrialized supply chain. But while those massive commercial container ports handle the bulk imports, the sources highlight that the secondary distribution, like the smaller coastal routes, the marinas, and tourist hubs like Ibiza, that's where the real operational genius lies.
Oh, absolutely.
It actually strikes me that Ibiza's economy functions almost like a perfectly tailored camouflage suit. Or, in network security, if you want to hide a malicious signal, you just bury it in a massive stream of legitimate noisy data.
That's a great way to look at it.
Ibiza provides that noise perfectly. You have a massive seasonal influx of tourists, high-end nightlife, cash-heavy transactions, and rapid real estate turnover. It's like the legitimate economy is providing cryptographic cover for the illicit one.
That is an incredibly accurate analogy. The environment itself acts as a laundering mechanism. I mean, a busy nightclub depositing massive amounts of cash, or a luxury property management firm showing a, say, 400% surge in short-term rental revenue in July.
It looks totally normal.
Exactly. It triggers zero anti-money laundering alerts because it perfectly aligns with the expected economic baseline of the island.
Right.
The network doesn't have to invent some complex cover story. The local economy provides a built-in transport network, a steady stream of luxury clientele, and ready-made channels for integrating dirty capital.
But operating a system that complex requires serious manpower. I mean, relying on traditional family bloodlines makes sense if you are running a localized racket in southern Italy. But if you are moving multi-ton shipments through Spain, a handful of Calabrian cousins isn't going to cut it.
No, it's really not.
When we look at who was actually arrested in that 2022 raid, it wasn't a monolith. The investigation uncovered a dual structure. You had one Milan and Ibiza-based group maintaining those traditional ties to the Calabrian Ndrangheta and the Sicilian Cosa Nostra.
Right, the traditional side?
Yeah, and then a completely separate Spain-based network focused exclusively on maritime logistics.
And this dual structure really illustrates the evolution of the Ndrangheta's global footprint. Because historically, their supreme resilience came from being rooted in family and blood ties in Calabria.
Which creates that famous wall of silence.
Precisely. That familial bond creates rigid discipline. It is notoriously difficult for investigators to penetrate. You know, you cannot easily flip an informant when the target is their own brother.
Right. The stakes are just too high.
Exactly. However, to scale globally, they had to adapt. They don't expand through a rigid, micromanaging central command anymore. They operate through decentralized franchises.
So a specific clan can just set up shop in Spain with total operational autonomy. And they just, what, kick back profits or maintain cultural loyalty to the central syndicate in Italy?
Pretty much, yeah. And the key to this overseas expansion is that they don't simply import an army of Italian operatives. That would draw too much attention.
Right.
Instead, they form strategic, highly specialized alliances with local and international actors who are already embedded in the target environment.
Which explains the multinational roster of the 2022 bust, because they arrested Italians, yes, but also Albanians and Hungarians.
It's very diverse.
And the sources point out that Europol's recent threat assessments show the most dangerous criminal networks in the EU cross multiple borders, and over two-thirds of them involve multiple nationalities.
It's a truly globalized effort.
The maritime logistics aspect is fascinating here, too. They use these seemingly innocent sailboats moving between Mediterranean marinas. They transfer cargo out in international waters, and then they pair those with land vehicles equipped with, like, custom-built hydraulic hidden compartments.
Very high-tech stuff.
Yeah. But looking at this structure, Albanian transporters, local Spanish storage facilitators, Hungarian operatives, is it even accurate to label this an Ndrangheta operation anymore? It sounds far more like an unbranded independent joint venture where everyone is just a specialized subcontractor.
Well, that distinction cuts right to the core of how modern organized crime is investigated versus how it actually functions. Mm-hmm. Slapping an Ndrangheta label on an operation is useful for law enforcement, sure.
Because it sounds good on a press release.
That? And it indicates the potential financial resources and the underlying threat of violence backing the network. But you are hitting on the critical vulnerability of traditional policing here. The true danger lies in the vast, unbranded ecosystem of service providers.
Basically the gig economy of the criminal underworld.
In many ways, yes. You have Latin American suppliers, Albanian-speaking logistical networks, and Italian financial controllers, and they are all collaborating on a per-shipment basis without ever merging into a single corporate entity.
Oh, wow. So they just team up for one run and then disperse.
Exactly. One group owns the South American supply chain, another manages the mid-sea transfer via commercial freighters to pleasure yachts, and another handles the Spanish mainland storage.
That's incredibly efficient.
It is. And if law enforcement limits their focus solely to individuals with documented traditional mafia affiliations, they remain blind to the vast majority of the actual operational architecture.
So this decentralized joint venture successfully moves the product across the Atlantic, transfers it to a sailboat, smuggles it onto the island, and sells it.
Right.
But that immediately creates a completely different massive logistical nightmare. You now have a mountain of physical cash sitting on an island.
A literal mountain.
Right. How do they convert pallets of cash into usable digital capital without triggering every financial alarm in the EU? According to the report, they solve it by purchasing the very paradise they operate in.
Yes. The handling of illicit proceeds is no longer an administrative afterthought for these groups. It is a specialized core organizational capability. Europol's data indicates that nearly all top-tier criminal networks either manage highly sophisticated internal laundering operations or they outsource the process to specialized architects.
Wait, like hiring outside contractors just to wash the money?
Exactly. We are talking of professional accountants, tax lawyers, and property brokers whose entire business model is obfuscating the origin of capital.
And real estate is like the ultimate sponge for this dirty capital.
The absolute best.
They utilize nominees, often relatives or associates with spotless criminal records, to purchase property, completely masking the true beneficial ownership. Then they leverage tourist departments, like the one we discussed in the intro, as commercial cover.
Yes, the tourism angle is key.
And what makes this so insidious is the elasticity of tourism pricing. I mean, They can take genuine rental payments from legitimate tourists and mix them with entirely fabricated revenue. If they claim they rented a penthouse for 5 times the standard market rate during a massive electronic music festival, I mean, who is going to prove otherwise?
Nobody, because it's perfectly plausible.
Exactly. The cash is deposited, taxes are paid, and the money is suddenly clean.
And beyond the financial utility, that real estate provides indispensable operational infrastructure. A luxury apartment is not just an investment portfolio asset to them.
Right. It has a dual purpose.
It acts as a high-end stash house for narcotics and cash.
Ah.
It serves as a secure, unmonitored meeting location. It functions as a safe house for transient network members who are operating under false identities. Acquiring real estate grants them stability, social legitimacy, and physical anchoring within the legal economy.
But they don't strictly buy their way into this infrastructure, do they? The sources detail how they also use extortion against local business owners in Ibiza. And here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, this part is crucial.
When I first read that, I pictured the classic protection racket, you know, pay us or we smash your windows. But looking at the mechanics, it operates exactly like a hostile corporate takeover.
The strategic objective is entirely different from a simple cash shakedown.
Right, because if you are a network sitting on millions of euros in cocaine profits, extorting a local marina operator for 5,000 euros a month makes zero financial sense. The risk-to-reward ratio is terrible.
Exactly. It's not about the money.
Right. They aren't extorting them for the cash. They are applying pressure to force a restaurant owner to store illicit goods in their commercial freezers. They are forcing a transport company to put cartel associates on their legitimate payroll, giving them clean tax records and social security numbers.
Yes.
They are forcing a marina operator to turn a blind eye to a specific yacht docking at 3:00 a.m. They are basically using intimidation to acquire essential, legitimate logistics infrastructure for free.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this illustrates the terrifying transition from mere criminal presence to criminal control. A standard drug trafficking syndicate simply wants to move their product invisibly.
Yeah, just stay out of sight.
But a mafia-type organization systematically attempts to regulate and dominate the local economic environment. They punish resistance to create structural dependence. The extortion payment itself might be meticulously disguised as a consulting fee or a supplier invoice on the books, but the ultimate goal is territorial and economic influence.
Which introduces a massive mechanical failure in how our banking system handles this. Because if a bank's automated anti-money laundering software notices these forced transactions, say a local restaurant suddenly paying exorbitant recurring consulting fees to some newly formed shell company, the bank's default reaction is often just to shut down the restaurant's account because it triggers a risk threshold.
Yeah, that practice is known as de-risking. And it is a fundamental flaw in the global AML framework.
Because it punishes the victim.
Heavily. Financial institutions operate under immense regulatory pressure. When they detect unusual transactional behavior, their priority is mitigating their own exposure to massive regulatory fines.
So they just cut their losses.
Exactly. They simply freeze or close the account. However, if they fail to investigate the coercive context, the fact that the business owner is actually a victim of a hostile takeover, closing that account completely blinds law enforcement.
So by just closing the account, the bank essentially destroys the evidence trail while simultaneously making the victim totally reliant on the cartel for cash flow. It's like a double win for the syndicate.
It really is. The victim is excommunicated from the legitimate banking system. They can't pay their suppliers. They can't make payroll. And they become exponentially more vulnerable to the criminal network that was extorting them in the first place. The compliance mechanism actively empowers the predator.
That is incredibly frustrating. So if these groups are this deeply embedded, using clean professionals, legitimate real estate, and co-opted businesses, how does law enforcement ever unravel it? Because traditional anti-money laundering protocols appear to be entirely outmatched by this model.
Traditional AML frameworks struggle for several structural reasons. The primary issue is fragmented visibility.
What does that mean practically?
Well, a single financial institution rarely possesses the entire transactional picture. Bank A might handle the corporate accounts for the real estate holding company. Bank B might process the maintenance and docking fees for the maritime vessels. And Bank C holds the personal retail accounts of the nominees.
So nobody sees the whole puzzle?
Right. No single analyst is looking at the entire board.
And even if they were, they're fighting against transactional plausibility. I mean, if an analyst at Bank B sees a 50,000 euro payment for vessel maintenance, hull scraping, and marina fees, there is nothing inherently suspicious about that in a maritime economy.
It's completely standard.
Right. Combine that with ownership opacity routing everything through clean nominees and traditional name screening against sanction lists is completely useless. The facilitators have spotless records right up until the very moment they are indicted.
Which is why the investigator's methodology has to evolve toward what the report terms an evidence-led investigation, supported by a resilient control stack. Investigators must move away from analyzing individual clients in a vacuum and begin reconstructing the entire operational network through data synthesis.
Okay, so practically speaking, what does a resilient control stack actually do? It sounds like it means cross-referencing reality against the paperwork.
That's a good way to put it.
Like, if that tourist company claims they generated €1 million in rental income over the summer, law enforcement can't just look at the bank deposit. They have to pull the municipal water bills, the electricity usage, the payroll taxes, and the physical booking software.
Exactly.
If the water usage for that property indicates the apartment was empty for 3 months, but the bank ledger shows €1 million in peak season rental income, the algorithmic cover falls apart.
That is the exact mechanism. You compare the stated financial activity against the physical operational capacity, and this applies equally to the maritime logistics. You cannot just track the ownership of a sailboat.
Right, because the paperwork is clean.
Exactly. So you integrate the vessel's automatic identification system data, the AIS, its stated fuel expenditures, and its declared port routes.
Okay.
So if a yacht claims to be on a leisurely coastal cruise, but its fuel consumption and GPS data show it burning massive amounts of diesel to hold a stationary position in international waters for 6 hours, which is perfect for a mid-sea cargo transfer, you have a data discrepancy that warrants a physical intervention.
But integrating municipal water bills, international maritime GPS data, and corporate banking ledgers, I mean, that requires a level of intelligence sharing that bureaucracies usually hate.
Oh, they despise it.
The 2022 raid was only possible because Spain, Italy, Eurojust, and Europol synchronized their actions down to the minute. If the Spanish authorities raided the Ibiza apartments even a day early, the WhatsApp groups would light up and the operatives in Milan and Tenerife would instantly liquidate their assets and vanish. Jurisdictional boundaries are basically the ultimate loophole for transnational crime.
Synchronization is absolutely non-negotiable. Criminal networks engage in jurisdictional arbitrage. They intentionally place their assets in countries with the slowest mutual legal assistance treaties, and they base their operations in countries with strict privacy laws. Overcoming that requires a unified transnational command structure for the investigation.
But this leads to a rather sobering reality check, I think. Arresting 32 people in a massive synchronized sweep in 2022 was heralded as a major victory.
It was huge news.
Yeah, yet the sources note that in August 2025, authorities were right back in Ibiza and Barcelona, arresting 3 more Ndrangheta-linked fugitives, seizing more cash, jewelry, and false identification. If an unprecedented multi-agency strike didn't permanently cripple the network, how do we actually achieve sustainable disruption? Or is modern law enforcement just trapped in an endless game of whack-a-mole?
Honestly, if the metric for success is solely the number of individuals put in handcuffs on raid day, then yes, it will always be a game of whack-a-mole. The 2025 arrests demonstrate a fundamental principle of organizational resilience. Personnel are infinitely replaceable.
Right, they just hired the next guy.
Exactly. You arrest a logistical coordinator, a new one is promoted. You shut down a trafficking route, a new one is established through a different port. The corporate entity simply transfers its operations to a new set of clean nominees.
So if arresting the guy on the boat doesn't stop the machine, you have to go after the engine itself.
Sustainable disruption requires dismantling their financial and legal infrastructure. It mandates aggressive, preemptive asset recovery.
Hit them in the wallet.
Precisely. Seizing the properties, freezing the corporate accounts, and confiscating the vessels before the legal proceedings even conclude, entirely starving the network of its operating capital. Furthermore, it requires prosecuting the clean enablers. If you consistently secure convictions against the tax attorneys and accountants who engineer the shell companies, you introduce catastrophic risk into the facilitation market.
You basically make it too dangerous for white-collar professionals to accept their contracts.
Exactly. The ultimate strategy is reversing the criminal's own methodology.
Mm.
Money laundering is the process of disconnecting the underlying crime from the capital, right?
Right.
So effective financial crime defense is the meticulous process of reconnecting it. You trace the seemingly legitimate transaction back to the corporate controller. You link the controller to the holding company, the company to the physical property, and finally the property to the narcotics trafficking. It is not about a single dramatic raid. It is about continuous systemic monitoring and unspooling that thread.
So what does this all mean for the listener? What does it mean for the structural integrity of the local economy? It means the boundary between the illicit underworld and legitimate commerce isn't a solid concrete wall. It is a sponge.
That's exactly what it is.
The capital flows seamlessly back and forth, soaking into the foundation of everyday life. From the price of bananas at the supermarket, to the maintenance fees at a local marina, to the premium rent on a summer apartment. These networks are deeply embedded in the fabric of the global economy. They aren't operating outside the system. They're utilizing its most efficient features.
And this raises an important question, which leads us to a highly complex systemic dilemma. If transnational organized crime relies on perfectly mimicking legitimate, privacy-respecting business operations to hide their capital, we have to ask if the modern concept of financial privacy is fundamentally doomed.
Because the very tools that protect a legitimate business owner's privacy are the exact tools protecting the syndicate's capital.
Precisely. To achieve the complete visibility required to stop these networks, to seamlessly connect the fragmented banking data, the municipal tax records, and the International Shipping Log Society, might eventually be forced to sacrifice the financial anonymity of every legitimate small business and private citizen. We are rapidly approaching a threshold where ensuring our global economy is not underwritten by cartels may require surrendering our expectation of financial privacy entirely. And that is a cure that would fundamentally alter the nature of economic freedom.
It is a truly sobering mechanical reality to consider the next time you book a seaside apartment or walk through a marina. It forces you to look at the pristine infrastructure of a holiday paradise and wonder, you know, who is actually holding the keys? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the hidden layers of the world. Catch you next time.